You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today we are talking about another close Pacers loss. The story of their season continues. Their 13th loss by 4 points or less, this time at the hands of the New Orleans Pelicans in New Orleans. And yet, these losses are not ones that any fan's going to be bothered by. The young guys played well. They're not expected to win with so many starters missing the game. Caris LeVert did return for this one. You know, it was a fine loss from where the Pacers' season is going. They would have liked to win. This team always is liking to win, but they did not win. We'll talk about the game. They re-signed Lance Stephenson to another 10-day deal today, breaking down what that means for the team, what it means for his status going forward, and what their plans can be to keep Lance for the rest of the season after this 10-day deal. And then Brogdon, it was announced this weekend, was shut down for 10 days with his Achilles soreness. Got to talk about that, what it could mean, and if he could be out for longer than that, because that is always ominous when a guy just gets completely shut down. Let's start with the game, though. You know how I am on Locked On Pacers. The games are always the most important story. Pacers fall to New Orleans, 117-113. This game was really close the entire way. The biggest lead for either team was 8, and it was back and forth, 12 lead changes. The longest run was only 10, which seems kind of large, but in the modern NBA is not much. It was a really back and forth and interesting affair. And really, had the Pacers not stunk it up with a 17-point third quarter, they would have won because they've scored 30 or more in all the rest of the quarters. And they played pretty good team-balanced basketball in this game. It was a fascinating game for this Pacers team. Caris LeVert returns from his calf injury and played 32 minutes. 19 points for him, but it took him 21 shots to get there, so not the most efficient night for him. And he shot well from three. It was his inside the arc game that was suffering. He couldn't get as good of screens without Turner or Sabonis playing in this game. So he was just a little off, but he was still good. 8 assists and 19 points. That was the big thing for me to start this game is, how's LeVert going to look inserted with this youth group? Because last year, LeVert, as the only ball handler, like the lead guy, was really good. He'd been averaging almost 25 points per game in his last 10 prior to this one, and he still played well. 19-8 is nothing to shrug at or nothing, you know, bad or anything like that, but took him 21 shots to get there. He wasn't finishing well inside the arc. So that was one story of the game, is his return, and he was fine. I think he'll ease into it a little more, but these are big games for him and the Pacers, right? He is, you know, reportedly on the trade block, and there's a lot of teams that do, in fact, have interested him, some of which I've talked about on the show. This is an opportunity for him, with every other key guy out for the Pacers, to really showcase his skills and kind of launch his value up. And 19-8 is going to be, you know, 21 shots is not great, obviously. Hitting half his threes, though, in 19-8 is going to be nice for the Pacers going forward. The other story of this game is the young Pacers. We'll talk about them in a minute, including a record-setting night for one Pacer. But let's talk about how weird this game was. The Pacers hit 19 out of their 46 threes. That's 41%. 19 threes is a ton. That would have been their franchise record like 2.5 seasons ago with how the NBA is trending. The Pelicans only hit 6 threes. They were 6 for 30. They shot 20% from deep. That was only the 9th game in NBA history. NBA history where a team that makes 13 or more threes than their opponents loses. It was a funky night. How do you make 13 more threes than the other team and lose? Pacers shoot better from deep. They barely shoot worse from the field. They take 25 free throws. All those stats suggest the Pacers should win, and yet they got beat. Why? Because, one, they got smoked on points in the paint. Jonas Valanciunas was amazing for the Pelicans in this game. He was drawing double teams from the Pacers in this game. He still had 5 offensive rebounds, 16, 12, and 6 night for Jonas Valanciunas, despite the Pacers sending bodies on bodies at him. And they just had so many lapses on defense where someone had to come double him or shade him or rotate from the weak side, and he burned him. And Lance, you know, Lance had a few weak moments that Carlisle was talking to him specifically that were highlighted on the broadcast, same with O'Shea Brissett, right? So they really struggled with Valanciunas. That was part of it. And that led to the Pelicans scoring 64 points in the paint compared to only 32 for the Pacers. And normally the Pacers are a good points in the paint team. So that was one reason why hitting 13 more threes did not really matter for the Pacers, is they stunk it up in the paint. And the Pelicans also hit 29 of 31 from the free throw line, an unreal free throw performance from them. That's a fantastic game. 29 makes is unbelievable. And that kind of highlights they were driving really well to the rim and drawing those foul shots in general. Again, the Pacers paint defense was really weak in this game. They've definitely been missing Miles Turner. They had a 117 defensive rating in the 4 games since Turner got hurt. I'm sure that went up after after this game. The Pacers also lost a turnover battle by 5. They lost the offensive rebounds battle by 2. Basically, every stat that would be either an efficiency thing or a possession thing outside of three-pointers, the Pacers got smoked in. So despite shooting way better than New Orleans from deep, the Pacers still lost. And it turns out to be a very strange, statistically anomalous game for them because they really did well generating good threes and knocking them down, but the Pels did pretty well in every other area. And this was the first game they felt Miles' impact not being out there in other games recently. But this one, it was painfully obvious as the Pelicans just were driving by everybody. You know, LeVert's defense was not up to snuff in this game. And Goga was fouling like crazy. He had 5 fouls. He couldn't play the whole game. Isaiah Jackson finished with 5 fouls. They couldn't get enough rim protection on the court. So to start the second half, Carlisle starts O'Shea Brissett at center, right? And when that was always an option for them with their other two bigs out. And Brissett actually played okay in this game. They played his 33 minutes to a dead draw. He had 6 points and 9 rebounds. Like, he 2 steals, 2 blocks. Brissett played a good game. It's just when you're going with O'Shea Brissett on Valanciunas, you've already kind of lost something in general, even if you are able to switch a little bit. So the tactical stuff the Pacers were forced to do because of the way the Pelicans played and because of the poor perimeter defense the Pacers played, it really cost them this game, which is a bummer because LeVert played all right and they got some good games from their young guys, which honestly, in the grand scheme of the Pacers season, they would like to win. You know, they would like to push for the play-in still, even if they're not really trending that way and the trade deadline is coming up. You know, the time to make these decisions is now, but in the grand scheme of the Pacers season, they're sitting in 13th place. They're 17th and 30, well out of the play-in. Losing a close game in which their young guys play well isn't the worst result ever. Chris Duarte had 11 points in the first quarter alone. He only finished with 14 and really struggled. I think he got hurt a little bit in the second quarter of this game. Maybe it was the first quarter. I can't remember, where he came up limping. Only scored 3 points the rest of the way. He played the rest of the game. I don't think it's a long-term injury or anything. Carlisle didn't even talk about it in his post-game presser. Just something to monitor for an already banged-up team. But he still had a nice game, especially in that first quarter. Goga, despite the fouls, continues to look good. 12 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists for him. Again, the fouls were concerning. He definitely doesn't have the muscle to defend a guy like Valanciunas at this stage of his career, but still showed some nice touches around the rim. 4 for 7 finishing for him in this game. 3 offensive rebounds in his own right. Isaiah Jackson played some nice defense as well with 2 blocks. He had 6 points and 4 rebounds. Another good game for him. He was the Pacers' best plus-minus guy at +9. And then the big one, the rookie, Dwayne Washington Jr., 21 points to lead the Pacers in scoring. Dwayne Washington Jr. leads the Pacers in scoring. 7 three-pointers for Dwayne Washington in this game. That is a Pacers rookie record for threes in a game. And that is the 36th player in NBA history to hit 7 or more threes in a game as a rookie. He was bombing them away. He was heat checking them in the fourth quarter in a close game. He was in the closing lineup. Dwayne Washington, in a game in which, you know, they were missing 2 centers, obviously, but they were only missing Brogdon basically from their guard, Brogdon and McConnell. They were missing 2 guys from their guard rotation. They still said, yeah, we're closing with Dwayne Washington. The longest tenured Pacer in the closing lineup was Caris LeVert. They acquired 373 days ago. They closed with Dwayne, and it was the right choice. He had a big 3 in this game late to cut it to 3. He was fantastic. 7 of 12 from deep in this game. All of his shots with 3s on his way to 21 points. Pacers win his minutes by 3 points. I continue to just be so impressed by his quick decision-making, his quick trigger. He's very streaky, as he was at Ohio State. His defense is still a work in progress, certainly. But I think he, because he can, you know, he always puts the ball on the floor quickly. He makes the right reads with passes. He had 3 assists in this game. I still think he can be a promising offensive prospect for this team. I don't know if he's necessarily ever a rotation-level guy, but, oh, man, does he – I think he's got a future in the league as a guy you take a flyer on a couple years in a row and see what you got with him. And he continued to prove why in this game with a very impressive 7-3 night. He deserves to be the story of the game to me. I mean, a Pacers rookie record obviously deserves to be a story, something that's only been done 30-something times in NBA history obviously deserves to be a story. And it made it this far in my – game recap because so much stuff happened between LeVert returning and the crazy statistical game, another young guy stepping up. So a promising road trip and game for the Pacers in general. 2-3, given their competition and given who's out, is pretty good. And they got to see the young guys play a lot and play pretty well. So even though they're still a little bit struggling and limping into the trade deadline timing, at least they had a promising road trip and have a little more confidence in their youth going forward. So not the worst thing ever for the Pacers. They would obviously like better results going forward. And we'll talk about those on coming shows. But now we got to talk about some stuff they did off the court, including re-signing Lance Stephenson today. So let's talk about that. But first, let's talk about the good folks over at PrizePicks. So I've been telling you about on this show for months. And if you haven't signed up yet, now is the perfect time. For a limited time, Prize Picks has an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all of our users. You get $50 for free if a player and your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point. You got to use the code NBA when you sign up. But that exclusive offer for Locked On fans, use the code NBA, is you get $50 for free if one of your picks scores one single point. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop games on the market and offer more props than any other DFS prop operator. Any prop you can think of for any player, points, assists, rebounds, made threes, you name it, they've got it. It's just you versus the projected numbers. You can win up to 10 times your entry as you pick 2 to 5 players to play every day. Go to prizepicks.com today or download the app in your app store. Deposit and use that promo code NBA, $50 for free if your first entry scores a single point. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. Thank you for making Locked On Pacers your first listen every single day. Why not make Locked On Pelicans your second listen today to hear about the win from the opposing side? But let's talk about Lance Stephenson right now, who signed a second standard 10-day contract with the Pacers right before the day of this game. I'm sorry if this terminology for these 10 days is very confusing. It was his fourth 10-day of the season with the Pacers. The first two were hardship exception 10 days. The most recent two have been standard 10 days that count against the salary cap. Yes, that's very confusing. No, I don't expect anyone to actually know the difference between those. Lance is back for 10 more days. And if you've been listening to the show for a few weeks, you knew that I expected and predicted this is exactly what the Pacers would do. Basically, what happens here is his 10-day money is not fully guaranteed, which sucks for Lance if he gets hurt. And the Pacers kind of stringing him along certainly sucks, but he was out of the league for a while and doesn't have a lot of leverage here. But that said, the reason this is happening and continues to happen is when a guy gets cut on a 10-day contract, there's no waiver process. It's just over. So the Pacers, who we are 2 weeks from the trade deadline, basically, we're 1 day away from it being 2 weeks from the trade deadline, which is crazy, right? They would like flexibility because they can easily now, at the drop of a hat for the next 10 days, create a roster spot to make a lopsided trade or to bring in some money or to do something extra in a deal that gives them added flexibility before they have to decide on Lance's future for the rest of the season. That's why they like the 10 days. And then after the trade is done, they can reshuffle their roster and bring Lance right back. You know, Bob Kravitz from The Athletic was at the last Pacers home game, and he asked Rick straight up, do you think Lance should, you want Lance to be on the team for the rest of the season? And Carlisle said, sure, right? That kind of tips the whole thing. We kind of knew that. He's infused some life into this team and energy into this fan base. And like, yeah, he deserves to be on the team the rest of the season. And for a game like tonight where they play the Pelicans, he was the backup point guard. He was ahead of Kiefer Sykes in the rotation. He played pretty well, again, dishing out 5 assists in this game, right? So even if they needed to cut someone, it would probably be Sykes anyways if Lance had a fully guaranteed deal. He doesn't right now, so it's not – it's obviously it'd be him on his 10-day, and then they just bring him back. But, you know, if it came to that, they'd keep him over Sykes. He's already playing over Kiefer Sykes in the rotation. But the reason they gave him the 10-day is all about flexibility because now they have the option to pull – even if they think Lance is going to be on the team the whole rest of the season, they can pull his deal, make the trade, shuffle the roster after the trade, and then bring Lance right back. No penalties to do that. That has always been the blueprint for these 10 days for the Pacers and Lance, even if it is extremely awkward to have to continue to string him along and keep signing him to new deals and having all this stuff go on. That's why this is happening. Have no doubts, fans, unless he gets hurt in the next 10 days or something crazy happens, like Kiefer Sykes turns into one of the best players in the league. In the next 9 days, Lance Stephenson will be on this team the rest of the season. And he's earned this, right? He was obviously amazing for that 2-game stint on his first hardship 10-day, and he had some struggling games after that. He had 14 in Boston and then really struggled for the next, you know, 4 or 5 games, averaging just 3.4 points per game, was a minus in the plus-minus in 4 of those 5 games, but then was excellent in Phoenix on the last down, his standard 10-day, 17 points on 7 or 9 shooting. He was great in that game. He was really good in this, you know, despite only shooting 2 for 6, he was really good in this game they just played against the Pelicans, hit a pair of threes, again, 5 assists, was really controlling that second unit, still has some sloppy turnovers, still does all the Lance stuff that makes him such a polarizing player. But clearly he has a role on this team that needs the jolt of energy, that needs the fan favorite, and needs a guy who can be invariably good and bad sometimes. Like, this is a rare situation, even where I, a guy who's not necessarily the biggest fan of Lance's game, is like, yes, he deserves a spot on this team. He deserves this backup point guard role. He's filled it very well. So it makes all the sense in the world that the Pacers brought him back. He will continue to fill the role that he's in ably. And even if, you know, Brogdon, we'll talk about him in the next segment, comes back at some point and they have to shuffle the rotation around, who knows what Jeremy Lamb's future is on this team? Who knows how they feel about Dwayne versus Lance in the rotation going forward? You know, there's a chance Lance is in, like, not the fully healthy nine-man rotation, but pretty close to it, depending on Brogdon's health status, depending on if LeVert or Lamb is on the team going forward. A lot of factors at play that he could, like, be a guy that plays for them the rest of the season. So beyond this 10-day or not, he will be a key guy for this team. The questions I will have for the Pacers is all about timing. If they don't make a trade in the next 10 days, how do they handle what's going to come for Lance? Because his current 10-day will expire. The last day will be February 2nd. The trade deadline is February 10th. What the Pacers would have liked is to keep Lance through his second hardship 10-day all the way through it. They ended it after 3 days because no one was in health and safety protocols. So he'd have had to be inactive going forward. And that's obviously not ideal. They wanted him to play, but they would have liked the extra days on that 10-day if they could have gotten him. Because right now, they'll play Orlando on the 2nd of February, and Lance's 10-day will expire. And then there will be a week until the deadline. They play the 4th, 6th, and the 8th before the trade deadline. So I'll be curious how the Pacers navigate signing Lance in that time frame, because if they ideally, you know, they want to wait to the last possible moment to make their deals, to get the best offers, the last offers they're going to get, to evaluate everything to the last possible point they can before they make deals, even though fans want them to happen now, wait until the last possible moment when every team's picked their direction has made the most sense, always has. So how they decide to tackle those three games in that 6-day stretch between the expiring of this and bringing Lance in for the rest of the season, that will be very interesting to me. Now, something to note about those games is only one of them's at home, right? With the, and you can tell the Pacers have done this before. Sometimes injured players or guys not on the team, they let work out at the facility or be around the squad still to the extent that they're legally allowed to by the NBA. You know, they're not literally practicing with the team. That would be illegal, but using the facilities for rehab and stuff like that's just fine. So maybe he could be like present and use the facilities to practice on his own time and stuff. But I don't know how they'll handle that stuff, you know, going forward. So that will be the timing that I am interested in what they do is, do they sign him to the rest of the season deal on February 3rd? If they make a trade before February 3rd, that doesn't matter. But that's the stuff to monitor with Lance going forward, is if the Pacers have not made a trade by the 3rd, how do they navigate signing him to his next deal? And how do they navigate trades not having that extra roster spot? But for the meantime, he's on the team for the next 10 days. They play Charlotte, Oklahoma City, Dallas, the Clippers, and the Magic in that stretch. So perhaps he can put a stamp on the game again. And again, with Brogdon out for all of those 10 days, most likely maybe he'll return for the last game or something. We'll talk about that again in just a few seconds. He will be needed. He will be the backup point guard for basically that entire stretch unless he gets hurt or LeVert gets hurt or a trade happens. So good for Lance. He earned this. Good for the Pacers and their fans. They need this and this jolt that he has provided. And when you're 17 and 31, do anything you can to provide some life and some energy into your team. Congrats to Lance Stephenson for his 4th 10-day deal. And I'm sorry to all of you for boring you by talking about this over and over, but it is the story of the team that they keep bringing this guy back, and he's had a good month for them. He's deserved it. But let's talk about the starting point guard. I should have talked about this yesterday, but Kevin Bowen was gracious enough to volunteer his time, and I wanted to get his perspective on the Pacers season in general and the young guys playing well. Malcolm Brogdon is hurt, and he's been hurt. You know, this isn't like a new thing, but there is some clarity and some updates on that and what this could mean for the Pacers going forward, that Malcolm Brogdon has been totally shut down for 10 days. So let's talk about that. But first, let's talk about the good folks over at betonline.ag, who would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the sports wagering action for 2022, and it's a new year. They've got a new updated desktop and mobile website where you can sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Wow, 50%. All you got to do is use the promo code LOCKEDON to get started. They've got football. They got basketball. They got hockey, boxing, UFC. They got your favorite Vegas casino games on there as well. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022 over at betonline.ag, who is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen every single day. Why am I talking about Malcolm Brogdon's injury? This might seem confusing because Brogdon has played in 3 games since December 15th of 2021. right? We're going on 40 days where Brogdon has played 3 days. What is the new update here? We've known he has his Achilles soreness. And in two of those games, right, he played against Miami for one quarter and played 8 minutes. Then he played 17 minutes against Boston and barely played in the second half. The Lakers game last week was the exception where he played the full game and was mostly in the rotation, although his minutes were clearly lowered at only 26. What is the update here? He's only played 3 games. His season has been weird. The update is we learned before the Phoenix game that they are shutting down. This is as of January 22nd, which is key for this timeline. The Pacers are just shutting down completely Brogdon for 10 days, right? The exact quote from Carlisle was, Malcolm is going to shut down for 10 days at minimum to begin a program to aggressively rehab his Achilles situation. We haven't made the progress that we need to make. That much is obviously clear. I mean, again, he's only played 3 games in like 40 days, so they need to make more progress to get him out there. And quite frankly, for a 17-30 team that's getting some interesting contributions from their guys that can feature Caris LeVert, that can now play their guards more minutes leading up to the deadline, this isn't the worst thing ever to have him shut down, especially if he can only play in bursts anyway. And he was very good against the Lakers. He prompted a whole segment from me talking about how good he can be when he plays because he was so impressive in that game. But it's not a bad thing for the Pacers that this is the route that they have to go, but it is a bad thing that Brogdon is dealing with an Achilles injury. Achilles are very scary to deal with. In fact, when Brogdon was speaking at practice, he said the worst injury that he could have is a ruptured Achilles, right? And that's why he's being so cautious about all this. And, you know, he was practicing almost every day, not in a full capacity necessarily, and like trying to go through game work and trying to play, right? That's why he played on that game on December 21st against Miami and then kind of not re-aggravated it, but got hurt again. And then he didn't play again for about 20 days against Boston, right? And he was always questionable and people always get annoyed when he doesn't play, whatever. But the reason they were so cautious is because it is literally the worst injury he could have to rupture that Achilles. Like, it is a years-long thing. So he was being really cautious. He talked about it. He was gracious enough to be available despite being injured after practice one day last week. And he said, just being cautious, that's what this is about, being cautious, because you know, he probably could like play a little bit, but it is not worth it to rupture that Achilles. You know, that's what he talked about. He also said, it's all about pain management. It's all about continuing to go in the right direction. You just don't want days where you're taking steps backwards. So I kind of think that's what Carlisle was saying when he said it hasn't healed the way they wanted. Is they had a few days in a row where they felt like he wasn't progressing towards getting to 100% or towards being a guy that can play every day. There's no point of having him practice. They're playing all right. The deadline's coming up. Just chill out for a little bit. Maybe even till the break, right? The All-Star break is like 2-3 weeks away, basically, right? Maybe just shut him down till then. I don't know what they're thinking exactly, but Carlisle said on January 22nd, they're shutting him down for 10 days. That's basically the rest of the month, right? February 1st is when that 10-day ban is up. I highly doubt that on that day, they'll just be like, yep, he's ready to go. Great. That's when they reevaluate him and will come out and say, yes, this is how Malcolm's feeling and how we're handling that going forward. Achilles are finicky and you have to be careful with those. And Brogdon, who already has an injury history and is very infrequently healthy for this Pacers team, the Pacers should be as cautious as possible with this one. I would, if I were in charge, shut him down through the All-Star break. That gets him a clean month of rehab. Maybe not completely shut him down, but like a non-basketball program or something like that to just keep him moving, but off the Achilles as much as you can to get him healthy, because he's important for the future of this team. He's one of their best players when he plays, like I detailed last week, and maybe he can play later this season and they can see how, because I think like I'm receptive to the idea that he might not play again this season. Right? He's played 3 games in 40 days and Achilles are finicky. There's a chance he never plays this season again. And that's not, you know, that'd be kind of forward thinking and smart from the Pacers to consider that. But you know, you never want to do that because you would like to get all the data you can on how does he fit with Duarte. Okay, how does he fit with Isaiah Jackson? We barely know that. How does he play with Goga, the new Goga, who's playing a little better recently? And then they might make some trades. In fact, it's looking like they're going to do something in the next 2 weeks. How does he fit with the new guys? You know, how those evaluation points are important, especially because Brogdon can, again, be traded this summer, knowing as much as you can with all the information possible. How does he fit with TJ Warren if Warren returns this season? All this stuff matters to me, someone who likes data points and likes being able to totally think about the situation as it relates to the salary cap. You know, I get why Brogdon would be, in theory, if you're a 17-31 team, you'd consider shutting him down for the season. But I think the thing the Pacers should try to do, or will do, potentially, is just shut him down to the All-Star break. At least we know that the 10 days are coming. And in that meantime, we'll continue to see, you know, LeVert, as long as he's healthy, do some point guard duty. Duarte will play more. Lance will play more. Duarte's been playing very well recently, right? So on the bright side of this, they get a lot from their young guys. They get to feature a fan favorite a little more. They get to feature LeVert a little more with the deadline coming up. Those are all good silver linings, but obviously having Brogdon play for a team with winning aspirations would be better. So we'll see how the healing goes. This won't be able to be updated or fully discussed until, you know, February starts on how they're going to tread forward with this. But in my opinion, they should just shut them down till the All-Star break. And after the break, once they have their team situation figured out and they know what the deal with him is, they can properly assess what they need to do with the Achilles going forward. Because the worst possible outcome from this is a ruptured Achilles or a torn Achilles or anything like that. Those just take so long to recover from. So that's where I stand on all that. That's the latest update on the Brogdon Injury Chronicles. And instead of just having him be in limbo and having us ask every game, hey, Rick, is Malcolm going to play today? By doing this, the Pacers can officially just say, he's done for 10 days. We'll update you in February. We'll figure it out then. We'll provide the best timeline going forward. This is the best for everybody. It allows Brogdon to be cautious. It allows the team to feature the right stuff leading up to the deadline. And it allows healing to happen for a team that is 17 and 31. So we'll update this when it's time. But for now, no more Brogdon discussion. For a little bit, we'll continue to cover this young team as a young, growing team with the guys that they have playing available. Finally back at home to see these guys on Wednesday against Charlotte. But tomorrow, I'm finally going to be able to talk trades in the trade deadline and my thoughts about what this team should do in their direction going forward. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be really great. So thank you guys a ton for listening. Hope you had a great day, and we will see you tomorrow.